This is Community Matters on 92 Gold. If it matters to you, it's on Community Matters.
Good morning, I'm Aaron Mee, and you're listening to the Community Matters program on 92 Gold and 104.3 Kinzu Country. Today, joining me here on the Community Matters program is Caleb Dobson from the Chautauqua Area Paranormal Society. That's how it is, right?
Yep, that's how it is.
Okay,
yep.
Perfect. So, Caleb, thank you for taking some time to talk to me today. First of all, I am really glad to be able to meet you, and I'm excited to learn about the Paranormal Society because, first of all, I understand that you guys have been operating in Chautauqua County for a little while now, and you guys have gone through a few different changes over the years of being in operation. So, first of all, can you tell us, how did you get started with this and get involved in it?
Okay, yeah. So, I've always been interested in the paranormal. Mom and I used to always watch, like, the Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, all the paranormal shows on TV, and kind of always wanted to start something like this, thought it'd be cool. And I actually was looking right before COVID happened, right before it hit, I reached out to a team that I found that was local to us, Jamestown Paranormal Investigators. And so I reached out to them, and I was like, hey, I'd love to be part of the team. At the time, I think I was like 15, and so I was like, my age might be a thing. They're like, no, that's okay, you know, we'll talk to the team in our next meeting, and we'll get back to you. It's like, okay, cool. Then I didn't hear from them for a while. COVID hit, shut down all their meetings. And during that time, I got a little impatient and just, I'm like, you know what? What if I play around a little bit, see what I can do? So I met a guy at work, and he was into that stuff too. I was like, dude, what if we start a paranormal team? And so then we started, you know, talking and coming up with a name and some different stuff. And that's where we found the Chautauqua County Apparition Investigation Team. We call it the CAT Crew. And we're like, yeah, we're onto something here. And we got a team together and all that. And then him and I, he just kind of decided maybe that wasn't for him, so he got out of it. Pretty much all the team left, and it just kind of collapsed, and it was like, you know, and then so I started trying to figure out to try to rebuild a team again, and I got some members on the team. My mom ended up joining the team, came on, and then she's actually the co-lead investigator with me as well, and then we decided we'd build another team, and we decided maybe it was appropriate for a name change, because all those members were gone. It's no longer, you know, and then so that's when we changed it to CAPS.
I like it. That's really awesome. So now, with that being said, what I wanted to discuss with this is, first of all, when we look at paranormal investigations and how that works, one of the things that I wanted to discuss with this is something that I always found very interesting when looking at different paranormal investigations. And one of the things that I found interesting about it was how people start the process by deducing what are things that can happen in the natural world that can be explanations of what you could see and things like that. So what I'm wondering is then, on your end, what are some of the things that you look at that kind of either help you determine whether you're looking at something that might be paranormal in nature versus something that is just an accident or
right.
a mistake?
So that's such a question we get asked a lot. And I think, you know, our team, we always 100% of the time try to debunk any cause. And we go to a client's home, or we go to their business, or you know, a church or whatever. Our number one goal, we're not going in there to find the paranormal activity. We're going in there to find the real cause of what's actually happening, what's causing this paranormal activity, quote unquote. And so when we go in there, we usually, any claims that we get, we always are trying to debunk those. For example, we had this one, she had this, it was a client's home, and she thought that she had some stuff like going around in the walls and stuff. She said she'd like hear scratching on the walls, and she thought her house was haunted. And so then she was more like alert kind of, so she started seeing these other things and stuff like that, and she was like, you know, now I feel like I see shadows, and I feel like someone's always watching me. We were able to actually find out that there was actually chipmunks in her walls. So going in there, investigating. So we're not going in to always just investigate for the paranormal. We're going in to investigate what the real cause of what's causing what she thinks is paranormal activity, or he thinks is paranormal activity. So we went in there, you know, we were able to get those chipmunks out. So then, that's what it was. And the next step was trying to get those out of there. So, you know, so it's not always, 99% of the time, it's not actually paranormal. It's not ghosts and things like that. It's normally a simple just explanation that you know, some people don't think of. So
that's a really good point and a really good way to look at it. So now, one of the things that I am really curious about, though, is, you know, as I understand that you've got a few years of experience with doing this here in this area, would you be able to go through some of the different experiences you've had with some of the different places you've been? What are some of the different places that you've been invited to, if you would be willing to divulge?
Yeah, so a couple of places I could talk about. We've been to the Reg Lanet Theater in Jamestown. We've been to the Stockton Hotel. Like I said, we've been calling them multiple client homes. We've been to Dipson Theaters. So we've been around to a bunch of pretty well-known businesses. And, yeah, you know, the activity is just completely different. You know, places that, like Dipson Theaters, Reg Lanet, they knew that their location was haunted already, and they just kind of wanted, you know, like a checkup, pretty much. So that's when we came in and did what we had to do. Stockton Hotel, there was multiple claims of it being haunted. They never had a team come in and actually investigate it. We found some pretty good stuff there as well. Some different activities. We've actually, not too long ago, just a couple months ago, actually, we were able to catch a full-body apparition walk across on the thermal imaging camera. Four of us caught it, and it was just insane. It was incredible to see that happen. We've had things get thrown. We've had some pretty crazy experiences. Wow. I'm trying to think of the other one that we had. We have, like, devices. We have over $3,000 worth of equipment.
See, that's also something that I wanted to ask. So when we look at some of these different places that you've been, mm-hmm. you also need to have really high-end equipment and a variety of different equipment
Absolutely.
To be able to measure some mm-hmm. of these things. So what are some of these different pieces of equipment? And in layman's terms, for, like, the average person that would be listening, what are some of the ways that these pieces of equipment work?
Yeah, so like we have devices, paranormal research device called the REM pod. And so it's got a couple different colored lights on it, about five lights. It's got a little antenna on it. It's about a round shape, cylinder. And that picks up any like movement near it or touching it. So, you know, and all spirits want to communicate differently. And that's why I think, you know, we have so much different equipment, is because sometimes, you know, some spirits may not want to communicate with that, but they like to communicate this way better. You know, they're all different. They're just like us. And so that device is used, and it'll beep and like show off like the color and the direction it's coming from, a little direction indicator. And so it'll tell you like that something's on this side of it, touching it, or just real near it. So that's a device we use. We also use one of our favorite pieces of equipment that we're able to debunk a lot of claims with it, is the K2 meter. So that's going to pick up any, you know, high like electricity or anything like that. So we're able to debunk a lot of claims with that piece of equipment, because that high EMF can be real dangerous and can cause hallucinations and stuff like that as well. We have DVR equipment, set up a bunch of cameras all over the place, trail cameras, spirit boxes that just pick up, you know, just different like radio frequencies, and through those radio frequencies and white noise, they can come through on that.
So when you go into some of these different investigations, do you choose your different pieces of equipment that you bring with you based on where you're going?
Oh, no, we bring in everything all the time. There are times we have two DVR systems. Most of the time we only bring one, unless it's a big location. We're trying to cover two buildings. For example, the one location is going to be the Judson House. We had to investigate the Judson House and the Eagle Hotel across the street. So something with that is you get two DVRs. You have one command center here at the house, and you have one command center in the hotel, so you can cover all the bases. Other than that, though, we bring in all of our equipment. And when we get there, you know, we kind of feel it out and figure out what's working, what isn't. Experiment, do different things and stuff like that.
So really, that's one of the other things that I was actually pretty curious about thinking of this is, you know, when you go to some of these places, you usually, in some of these places like the Stockton Hotel and some of these other places, are either people's homes or businesses, and they're in operation during normal times. So how do you get in to be able to do some of these investigations?
So, you know, you got to be trusted, for sure. You know, no one wants anyone to come into their home or business or anything, not being able to trust them. You know, so we have to have a lot of trust. And even on the team, like, you know, our members have to go through so many different things. They have to go through a bunch of paperwork, applications. They have to do a bunch of tests, like investigations with us. We really have to be able to get to know them before we can just bring them on the team. We're not just going to pick up anybody off the street and be like, hey, you want to be part of the team? Just because we have to be able to trust that person. And it's like a family. So I think that's one of the main reasons. And another one is, you know, just you go to these locations, these businesses, these clients, and then they refer us to the other people. And, you know, some of the businesses will take business cards for us and all that. We never charge. You know, it's all free services. So people help us out with just taking some of our business cards and hanging out to the next people who need help or anything like that. So, and that's how we kind of get around. You know, we start off small and kind of having to call around to get locations, and now the locations come into us.
Wow, that's really fascinating. Yep. So now, with that being said, One of the other things that I wanted to ask about is the actual, like, entry into locations. So, now, with that, when you look at some of these places, do you choose a different time? Like, what is the preferred time for you when you tend to go in? Is there a certain time of day?
So, most of the team has actual jobs during the day. And so, we usually go in at night. Usually, we will be packed up, ready to go, depending on where we're going. Like, if it's somewhere further away and we have to stay at a hotel for a weekend or something, we'll do that, you know. The team will take off a couple days off work or something, you know, whatever we have to do. But for any like local thing, we usually, you know, we'll get there and start setting up around like 7-8 o'clock. We usually want to go lights out by 9:30, and we're there depending on how the investigation is going. If it's going good, we're getting evidence, what we need, we could be there till 3:30 in the morning. If we're not getting anything or we're able to debunk it real quick, we could be there 2 hours, 3 hours.
That's really interesting, actually. And then really, that leads me to a question that I had just kind of thought about then. So when you mention lights out and you mention lights on versus lights off and you're doing the investigation, what are the changes that you notice from lights on to lights off? And how does that kind of open up the possibilities that you can experience?
Right. So I think it kind of sets that like... Because, you know, they don't just communicate in the dark. They won't just communicate in the light. And some people are like, you know, they only communicate at night or only during the day. I think, you know, the reason we go lights off is just, I think it sets that kind of, that experience and stuff like that. There are locations that we've had lights on in different rooms for experiments and stuff, but most of the time lights are off. And we feel that's...
And that's something that I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, some of those places would just creep me out. I mean, that's one of the things that I find, I would love it, but I would also like be terrified at the same time, because just walking through some of those places at night would be kind of creepy.
Right.
So how does that work then? Like when you go, say you go to a place and you're getting ready to set up, can you walk us through the setup of say like, and I guess you couldn't say anything's typical when you're doing this stuff. So what would you say for an average place, like one command center, how would you lay out your pieces of equipment and where would you place them in the house?
Okay, so yeah, so when we get there, like when we first started off, it took us sometimes 3 hours to set up. We did, you know, we were new, trying to learn it all. And now, I mean, we can get in there and be set up within an hour, 45 minutes. And everyone has a job. So we have tech managers, we have case managers, lead investigators, all that. So we have the whole nine yards, and we have tech managers are usually trying to find, going through the house, they're doing a walkthrough, they're finding places to set up the tripods and DVR cameras. They're looking, they're setting those up, getting those in the right spots that are looking good for the camera and the monitor. We have them setting up trail cameras, all that. We have other people unpacking the bins. Our other lead investigator, she's setting up the command center table and setting up the monitor and all that, running the cords to them and all that. So I mean, just when we get there, you know, it's just, it all falls into place. We all know what we're doing. We've done all the trainings. I mean, we've set up trainings just to go through setting up and taking down, so we can learn that stuff, and the team knows what they're doing as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. See, I love that. That is one of those things where when you see a group of people that are really well organized and mm-hmm. able to just get in and execute on something like that,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Right.
So now, one thing that I wanted to talk about then is, let's talk about the team a little bit. So really, one thing that I wanted to talk about, and you discussed this as like, you know, a tight-knit family,
mm-hmm.
and what I'm kind of curious about is, you know, can you go through who the different members of the team are?
Yeah, so I mean, we have members from all ages. I'm actually the youngest and the founder of the investigator as well. Yeah, I'm 17 years old, and we have our oldest members, 75, I believe, and she's our team historian researcher, and she's getting all that stuff for us and giving us all the research. She doesn't go on much because she's older and she can't get around as well, and she's got some knee problems and stuff like that. But I mean, she does the incredible job of what she does, giving us all the evidence what we need. She's talking to all the historians and getting the evidence for that, or the getting all the information that we need for that location and stuff like that going in there. So we kind of know what we're doing, and kind of like, you know, and when I receive the paperwork and looking through it all, when she gets it to me, you know, I kind of, from there, I can kind of see like what we're going to do a little bit. Obviously, you know, it's just roll with it when you get there, but you can kind of set it up and kind of know what you kind of want to do from the start.
Helps you build like a game plan.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So you can get that, get it, get, you know, a, scratch, you know, game plan ready to go. So you kind of know and you have an idea of what's going on when you arrive.
That's really interesting. So then one thing that I wanted to ask in, you know, your years of experience of doing this so far, what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in doing this, and what have been your solutions to those challenges?
So, we had some, like, you know, trying to set up the equipment. I didn't know anything about cameras or DVRs, any of that stuff. YouTube's been a good friend of ours because, you know, you get different equipment stuff, you learn how to use it. Another thing, too, is there's so much equipment and so many different ways to investigate. You kind of build your own way of doing it. If you look at any team out there, whether they're famous or they're just a small team, you can really tell just how completely different it is. And nobody's wrong. Everyone does it their own way, and that's how they do it. That's the cool thing about this field is everyone's got their own way of doing it, and nobody's wrong. You know, it's just, that's their way of doing it. And so I think getting the team on board too, because, you know, we have members who've investigated on their own before, you know, like have a little bit of experience. We've had members who have no experience. So, you know, some people kind of already come in with their idea, their way of investigating. Some have no idea, and we train them and help them and help them be a better investigator. The one thing that I do too is I don't force anybody into investigating a certain way. Everybody has their own style of investigating and is comfortable with their way of doing it. And I allow that, like on the team, anybody can investigate the way that they want to, how they want to, and how they're comfortable with doing it.
That's really awesome. You know, so. See, now one thing that I wanted to ask then, because I actually was given your information from Scott from the Warren Area Society of Paranormal Investigators.
I love Scott.
That awesome. Whole crew, they're all so nice.
They're
amazing. And really, what I wanted to ask then is when I was able to get their information from you, or vice versa, you know how that went together. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to ask is, have you had any opportunities to work with other groups in the areas, and if so, have you had any chances to learn from working with them?
Absolutely, 100%. I think if it wasn't for Mike Polaro and JPI and Scott Morton from WASP, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. You know, looking at those other teams and them really helping us has been tremendous help for us. We're new coming into this, and these, you know, both of them have been in it for a very long time and have done it for 20 plus years. And Scott's been a great help. So has Mike. You know, Mike's worked with us on investigations as well. We worked with his team. Our first actual investigation as a team was with him at a location we can't mention, but it was one of his investigations, and he allowed us to come in with him. We've worked together quite a bit. We actually host also a convention every year. The cool thing about this field too is it's just everybody's a family. No matter different teams, locations, any of that, just we all come together as a family, and that's the awesome thing about this family, the paranormal family. And we've worked with amazing people, and we host a convention every year, and our first convention was actually this July. We're working on the next one for next July.
Wow, that's exciting. So can you tell us a little bit about that? How did that go for this year? How did you get started with it, and really where are you aiming at for next year then?
Yeah, of course, it went real well actually. You know, there's things that you learn some, and you'd figure out what you want to do, what you want to keep, and what you want to change. And we've definitely like to grow. And Scott was actually there for WASP, was there, JPI was there, and just we met so many great people, and now I've had this, you know, huge para family in the field. And it went real good actually for the first one. You know, obviously there's things that we want to change and make better. We actually planned it all in 4 months. And the teams, you know, they were like, wow, you know, you're crazy. I don't know how you guys did that in 4 months and made as well as we did.
That's a quick turnaround.
Yes, it was just, you know, we decided one day, we're just like, you know what, let's host a convention. And it just came out of nowhere, and we're just like, yeah, you know, we're going to do this every year. And we've already been working on for next year. And some of the plans, we do a charity every year money goes to a good cause. Our charity this year is breast cancer awareness. Next year, we're actually planning for, this is the first time I've announced this, the Wounded Warrior Project. And soldiers and stuff, and we want to get soldiers there, and they can guest speak and stuff, and stuff like that. So
that's awesome.
We're kind of changing directions, and some different things that we want to do, some merch that we want to get for next year. We still have shirts actually available from this year's convention, and you know, just the little things that you learn that we want to change and how we want to promote it and all that stuff. So
Well, that's really awesome. It sounds like you guys have a really big following already so far with it. And one thing that I did want to ask as we look forward for the rest of this year and as we're just talking about next year there, do you have any investigations in the pipeline? Anything that you're kind of preparing for or that you're looking forward to?
We actually, I can give a little bit of information on this. We actually are working with a client right now. She feels that something's attached to her, and she feels she's in great danger. We went and met with her, and you know we were able to talk with her. She's great person. Her and her wife, so we're actually working with them. Pretty much all of November is committed to them. And kind of how we work that, you know, we're not, you know, there's teams out there that do like one investigation. Sorry, we couldn't help you. Or, hey, this is what you get. We go and do what we have to do and get the right people involved. You know, we don't specialize in everything. We investigate and figure out what we need to do from there. You know, so we get, you know, we're actually going to be bringing a medium to the location. And they're going to work with us on the investigation. So pretty much we're committed right now for all of November to this client and her family.
That's really awesome. Well, yeah. It sounds like you guys are doing some really amazing work. And one thing that I wanted to ask is if people want to learn more about what you guys are doing, what's the best way that they can find you online?
Facebook. It's under CAPS. So you can find us on Facebook. We have a TikTok. It's under CAPS as well. You find all of our contact information is on Facebook. That's what we use the most. So if you're looking to find us, it'd definitely be Facebook CAPS. It's got our email on there, our phone number. We check the email daily, and we always call back. If we miss your call, we'll call you back as soon as we're able to. We're in the office every day as well, so we're always working in the office and figuring out what we have to do.
Absolutely. Well, Caleb, I really appreciate you taking some time today to be able to come down here and talk to me about this. It's really some amazing work that you're doing. And to be honest, I'm just excited for all the different people that you're going to be able to help in this community and as you guys travel around and get to see more things. So thank you for taking some time to talk to me today.
Of course. Thank you. Yeah.
Community Matters on 92 Gold.
Good morning. I'm Aaron Mee. You're listening to the greatest hits here on 92 Gold. And today, joining me here on 92 Gold is Cassie Damcott, the administrative assistant of the city of Warren, Pennsylvania. And first of all, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you give us some of the details on how Warren works with the Fair Housing Program and how you guys work together with it?
The city of Warren receives HUD funding through DCED, which as a requirement, we must make every effort to avoid discrimination and provide equal opportunities in the administration of and implementation of programs and services that are federally funded. Warren, the city of Warren and the county of Warren, honestly, have a lot of rental properties, have a lot of housing properties such as the towers and senior housing. And the owners of those properties have to make sure that they give their renters every equal opportunity to rent without discriminating based on race, gender, religious creed, ancestry, age, national origin, handicap, or disability. And in addition to that, the Fair Housing Act of Pennsylvania also includes the use of guide support animals because of blindness, deafness, or physical handicap of the user. And they cannot discriminate based upon having a guide animal or a support animal that has been registered as a service animal. In addition to the Fair Housing Act through Pennsylvania, the city of Warren also affirmatively furthers fair and equal housing opportunities for individuals and groups protected by Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act, and that is a federal act as well. So it's not just the state of Pennsylvania who requires us to offer fair housing opportunities, but the federal government also requires us as well.
One thing that I see that people seem to appreciate here in the city are the older houses that are here and how beautiful the yards are upkept. And one thing that I wanted to talk about in relation to that is blighted properties and things like that. So when we talk about fair housing and keeping this community really nice looking and well upkept and things like that, what are some of the concerns that people have with blighted housing and how do you address those?
The city has a blighted property review committee. Any properties that people have concerns about, and they should contact the codes department at the city. They are the ones that handle the complaints, investigate the complaints for those types of complaints, and then they further on to not just property maintenance, but maybe there's a lack of utilities in the home. There's several pieces that they have to meet in order to be qualified as blight, but we do have a committee that handles the blighted properties in the city. And Randy Rossi, actually the director of the codes and zoning department, is also our fair housing officer. So any concerns or complaints with a fair housing discrimination can be asked of him, and he can give you the correct tools to then further file your complaint with the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. You can call them. There's a phone number, 717-787-4410. And you can visit one of the three regional offices. The closest is in Pittsburgh. The other two are located further out in the state. One is in Philly, for example. And you could also complete a questionnaire, which is located on their website, to begin the process of filing a complaint. There's also, you can dual file a complaint or an allegation of discrimination for fair housing with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, also known as HUD for short, Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. And complaints filed through them can be done in several ways, actually more ways than the Pennsylvania one, through an online portal, by email, by regular mail, or by phone call. The City of Warren's website has a link specifically dedicated to fair housing. It has just some general basic information of the Federal Fair Housing Act, as well as the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act. And there are links to both of those to further read deeper into them. And like I said, it links right to the complaint forms for both of them or the phone numbers for both of them. And we also, every year as a city, file a resolution that we are affirmatively furthering fair and equal opportunity in housing for individuals and groups protected. It should be noted that as a landlord or a property manager, if someone were to file a complaint against you, that it is illegal to retaliate against that person for filing the complaint, and you should never be afraid to file a complaint if you feel that you've been allegedly discriminated against or unfairly denied the opportunity to rent from somewhere or to have an opportunity to buy a home. It also includes like mortgage lenders or brokers and realtors. So before, during, or after an allegation has been made, it's illegal to retaliate against that person.
So, Cassie, thank you for taking some time today to be able to enlighten us on how the Fair Housing Act works here in Warren County and also in the city of Warren.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Community Matters. If you have any questions, inquiries, or suggestions, feel free to reach out at warrenradio.com and click contact.